Shumbi. We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting scene on CFAX, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Jersey's animal shelter are sending a baby seal washed up on the island shores to the UK for treatment. Mia, who is thought to be 5 days old, was found 6 days ago.
Thanks to Jed Chapman for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Linda Smith. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Sandy Toksvig. Jeremy, a good one for you now. Why is striking green the new flame red?
Ah, our Prime Minister. This is his drive to break the fire brigades union so that he can bring in a more flexible and consumer-oriented service. So that now, if you're not happy with the service provided by a local fire service, instead you can opt for a bunch of squaddies driving a 1950s ice cream van. And ultimately, the service will be privatised and run by Group 4, and who will say, we need to fight fire with fire, and they'll turn up with petrol bombs. What the government's done, rather than pay the fire workers properly, has appointed Sir George Bain, who said that in order to be paid anything at all, they need to be more flexible and learn new skills. For example, all firemen know how to rescue someone from a burning building, but how many of them can speak French or fly a glider? And what he says in his report is they need to enhance their careers by lateral development so that you acquire new skills and therefore more money. For example, Sir George Bain is not only Vice Chancellor of Queen's University in Belfast, he also is advisor to the Bank of Ireland and has directorships in two financial firms and yet still only manages to make an enormous amount of money.
And watch these unfortunate squaddies with this green goddess deploying a hose, and it was just sort of trickling. And I thought, to see a 50-year-old lorry with a prostate condition is heartbreaking. The hose, there's nothing on it. They couldn't get to the windows.
I was just thinking that, the government tactic seems to be to try and sort of demonise the firemen, and it's quite difficult, really, isn't it? To sort of persuade people that firemen aren't, firefighters, I beg your pardon, aren't a good thing, really. Blair saying things like, well, I don't think many of you realise that actually firefighters cause more fires than they actually put out.
What I like, Sir George Bain saying, he wants to stop the military approach that the fire department have. It's not going to be run on militaristic lines anymore. So instead of saying, you, fireman, get that hose, now I'm going to go, look, if you don't mind awfully, and if you've got the time, and then he'll go, shan't.
Less Arthur Lowe, more John Le Mesurier.
Yes, exactly. Anybody fancy going out to put a fire out? Oh, I don't know, we've got to finish our ping-pong game.
What do you mind awfully?
Well, they won't be fighting the fire, because that would be militaristic. They'll kind of talk to it and get it to come to terms with it.
Apparently there's going to be a new service. Did you read this? Instead of ringing 999, you ring 888 if it's not quite so serious.
It's been left to the Green Goddess to put out Britain's fires, though Charlie Dimmock's water feature is no substitute for the real thing. Tony Blair said in the comments...
Do you know what, Simon? This is just a professional point, but if you go at the end of a joke... It can send out a mixed signal.
Tony Blair stated in the Commons, no government on earth would yield to the 40% pay claim. Luckily, this government is from the planet Zargon.
Are we allowed to say victory to the firefighters?
No.
I've said it now.
Oh, no. You said victory to the firefighters, but we're not meant to say victory to the firefighters.
I knew there was something I wasn't meant to say.
Linda, you can't come to it.
Because it'll take too long. I have left a duck in the oven. I don't want to get home and find three green goddesses on my front lawn.
Is that some kind of code, I've left a duck in the oven?
I actually have. I suppose the duck will be out of the question.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
Linda, how come Bin hasn't gone?
Osama bin Laden, thought to be dead, but has recently released a new CD for Christmas. I can't see it as a Christmas number one, though. But you want a bit more, jingle bells, really, don't you? Unless you're going to die, you infidel. I just can't see it. It just hasn't got that magic, really. So he's put out this CD, and... I don't know. I suppose the next thing will be he'll be having a series like Ozzy Osbourne. Ozzy Bin Laden. And Bin Laden's be quite good with him just sat there trying to work the video in his cave shouting, Sharon! Or any one of the other three wives. I can't remember your names now.
Did you see they've sent out a thing to say how we know if there's some terrorist thing? And apparently one of the main things is if you see clouds of coloured gas. And I don't know I needed to be told that. I think if I... If I was walking down, you know, say, Guildford High Street and I saw a cloud of coloured gas, I'd think, hello, that doesn't look too clever. And the smell of almonds. This would be a nightmare if you're running a marzipan factory. I think. You wouldn't know, would you?
Because marzipan's quite nasty.
That's quite nasty in itself, actually. It has the smell of terrorist gas and the texture of Semtex.
I suppose that's why old people like it. It reminds them of the war.
They told us they'd got most of Al-Qaeda. They told us that they'd killed Bin Laden. And the Americans, when they got all those people and stuck them in Guantanamo Bay, they said, oh, we've got some hard cases in here. Now they admit it was a pensioner's outing from Islamabad. And at the time, they were saying, oh, no, we got the Riddler, the Penguin. Kaiser Soze, Fu Manchu, Professor Moriarty. Oh, we got the lot.
So he's the last one left then. So he's won. I'm a celebrity terrorist. Get me out of here. He's king of the caves, isn't he?
New tape has been hailed as proof that Osama bin Laden is still alive, but Tony Blair's speech at the Lord Mayor's banquet warned that Britain must be watchful of a new terrorist threat. Prime Minister has warned of a new kind of terror. If we're not totally vigilant, we could expect Fame Academy 2. Sandy, who hopes to put the NHS on a new foundation?
Oh, this is the very clever Alan Milburn, who has announced, in an effort to make all hospitals exactly the same, some are going to get more money than others, and they're going to be called foundation hospitals, so it makes it sound more sort of arty. And you can buy shares, I think, and artificial limbs and things if you want to support your local hospital. It's not to get a two-tier system, apparently, in the NHS, because we already have that. So there's no point in trying to get it. And so some local hospitals will be just fabulous, and some won't, and they'll be called foundation hospitals.
There is one other problem with the idea of getting local people to run hospitals. The only thing wrong with the idea is that it's really, really stupid, because we don't know how to do it. And the only people who will try and get on these boards will be people who fail to become magistrates and school governors or don't have the energy to beat on the side of police vans as suspects are brought to court. Bored people who haven't got cable.
Milburn is clearly off his trolley, one of the very few.
Shortly after the NHS league tables came out, I took my son up to the local hospital, and he's 8. And we were going in, and he said, I don't want to go in here, Mum's a very bad hospital. And I thought, that's interesting, sort of critique of the NHS from a small boy. And I said, why do you think it's a bad hospital? And he pointed to a large sign over the door that said, guard dogs operating. And
Health Secretary Alan Milburn has announced plans for foundation hospitals, which are allowed to opt out from NHS control. Earlier in the week, Mr. Milburn backed the campaign for the elderly to get their winter flu jabs. If only all our health problems could be solved by one little prick. So, 2 points to Sandy. Alan, listen to this. Come on over to my place. Oh, hey, girl, we're having a party. We'll be swinging, dancing, and singing. Baby, come on over tonight. Which party, Alan, is finally being inspected?
This isn't the bloke who's shot the dog that ate his peacock, is it?
No.
Hey, it's just one in the dark and trying. Yeah, I know what this is, really. This is resolution 1441, which is exactly the wording you would have had when it started. I never know what diplomats do. They've been sitting on their asses with these bottles of Perrier water in New York for 8 weeks, arriving exactly what they would have had at the beginning, which entitles them to go into Iraq. He's got 8 palaces, which may have stuff in the basement. One of the palaces is 7 miles across. I mean, it's sort of impressive in its own way. Under these palaces, there may be weapons of mass destruction. He says he hasn't got them. We have a franchise now to go in with these very strange inspectors, 100 inspectors.
I think it's fair enough, though, that he's saying, I don't have any weapons of mass destruction, because I think if you've got a palace that's 7 miles long, it's awfully difficult to remember where you've put everything. You know how you're having people around, you think, oh, I'll have a fondue, because that's nice and easy, you haven't really got to cook, and you think, where the hell have I put the fondue set? So, I mean, I have some sympathy. You would be spending your time going, now, what was that in the cellar? Is that baby food or not? Now, you must be sitting at home with a pad and a pencil thinking, where have I put everything, don't you think?
Saddam Hussein has accepted the UN Security Council's resolution allowing weapons inspectors to return to Iraq. Saddam bowed to international pressure by sending a letter to the UN Secretary General, Kofi Annan. He even extended the courtesy of removing the anthrax before he sent it. George W. is anxious to examine the contents of the letter and will do so just as soon as someone takes pity on him and teaches him how to read. We start round two with a cutting from the South End Evening Echo.
Toothbrush, as new, 25 pence. Call Tom.
Thanks to Trevor Owen for sending that in. Jeremy, who is in a right royal pickle this week?
Is it that they've got this bloke in? They're investigating themselves. They're having a thorough and open cover-up of all their scandals. Some bloke who works for Prince Charles is going to investigate all the allegations against the royal family, and he's going to be very, very independent and very, very thorough.
We get half a point for Sir Michael Peat, yeah. Charles's secretary, who looks like Paul Gambaccini. It's quite unsettling.
Sir Michael Peat, before he was private secretary to Prince Charles, was the privy purse, and I wondered what that was, but he obviously buys the... buys the loo roll. It is curious how they live in a completely different world, though, isn't it? A wonderful story about the Queen Mother, God bless her. When remote controls of televisions were first invented, she was given one as a present, and she was shown how it worked, and they said, here you are, ma'am, and you press this button, you change channels, and you press this button, and you change the volume. And she looked at it for a short while, and she said, well, it's very nice, but I still think I'll find it easier to ring.
Actually, my nan, with the remote control, wouldn't use it for ages because she thought if she didn't line it up with the telly, if she missed the telly, she'd leave a mark on the wallpaper. We had her put in a home.
The royal family is to hold an internal inquiry into the series of scandals that have followed the collapse of the Paul Burrell trial. Been allegations that Prince Charles's personal assistant, Michael Fawcett, has been fencing royal gifts, so the royal family insists that the only presents they've ever had fenced have been Balmoral, Sandringham and Cornwall. Linda, listen to this.
I don't know, but make it stop.
Every Loser Wins by Nick Berry. Linda, how did one of the Beatles' losers win this week?
I know.
Yeah.
Well, that's a coincidence, Sandy, because so do I.
Yeah, but I was first.
And
I was like quicker than you.
The funny thing is, it is my question.
Yeah, Anna, but I heard
boys,
it.
Boys.
Oh, I said. I say catfight, everybody.
Well, I don't know. Do you want us to tell them? Go on. Do you want to tell them?
No, I'll let it be. It's all right.
No fight over.
No, let's not fight. All you need is love. It's an important scientific survey. Apparently, the Beatles are the best band not to get to number one with Let It Be. And there have been all sorts of other bands that haven't got to number one that would have got to number two, like Oasis, Wonderwall. Surprising, because I would have thought that was number ones, but it's number twos.
Is this a discovery, this? Couldn't somebody just looked it up? I mean, you can get that thing, that Guinness Book of Paul Gambaccini's behavioural disorder, where he has to write down lots of lists about hit records. What's that called? Guinness Book of Hit Records.
Yes, but if we don't keep funding the research, you don't get more lists, do you? This is a new list. It always seems to be Rolf Harris who stops them getting to number one. Two little boys or something. Rolf Harris, who is to art what Rolf Harris is to art.
In a poll this week, the Beatles' single Let It Be was named the greatest chart topper that never was. Beatles recorded some fine number twos, including Free as a Turd and Spend a Penny Lame.
Spending a Penny isn't number two, that's number one.
Yeah.
Oh, this whole show is a charade.
Sandy, who's been plagued by an explosive theory?
Is this to do with the volcano in Santorini?
Yes.
Oh, very good. There you go.
Oh, you
want a bit more. Apparently, they've now discovered, and this again has taken a short while for them to work this out, that the biblical plagues were, in fact, real, in that a volcano on the island of Santorini went off and surprised a lot of frogs and locusts. And they flew into the air and landed in Egypt. I haven't completely understood it, if I'm honest with you.
It was a plague of blood as well. What happened to that? Murrain, the cattle died.
No, that was when the explosion went off, it was next to a black pudding factory. And
so basically, the scientific explanation is more far-fetched than the biblical one.
Yeah, that's what this is. Yeah, fundamentally.
It's a shame, though, to spoil these, because the important thing about scriptures is they're not supposed to be true. They're just good stories. I mean, it's like saying, the burning bush was probably just caused by careless use of matches. And then the two tablets of stone, they were probably kidney stones that Moses passed in an effort to put out the burning bush.
But can you imagine, though, if Moses is standing on the edge of the Red Sea and they're going, how are we going to get across? And he's thinking, I haven't the faintest idea. And then off goes the volcano and the sea parts. He goes, thank God for that, that's fantastic. And so it must have been a good day for him.
I expect he said, well, there's a bit of luck.
Oceanographer Dr. Daniel Stanley claims the plagues of Egypt and the parting of the Red Sea might have been caused by a volcanic explosion. The doctor believes the plagues came from a giant cloud of ash. As a result, a 10-mile exclusion zone has been placed around Doc Cotton. Alan, why has the C of E become the CV of E?
Is this about divorcees now being able to remarry in church?
No.
No.
What a pity.
Can you say it again, darling?
We know 2 points.
We know 2 points.
Know.
To do with jeans.
That's
we
two
know.
Each,
is
mind.
It casual clothing?
That's four.
No.
No, it's not.
I couldn't hear the question.
I know, come on.
I didn't hear the question.
Casual clothing.
No, I think you ought to hear the question again for Sandy.
Yeah.
Linda, I think you know the answer to this.
What is the bloody question?
I'll give you the question again.
Thank you.
Why has the C of E become the CV of E? Linda, you have the answer to this.
Now you mention it, I do actually, Simon. I think it's because they're going to interview archbishops now. Instead of, I don't know how they did it before, hunt them down to the point of exhaustion with dogs or something. Now they're going to have job interviews and they're going to have a CV and talk about why they think they should be archbishop and probably go on outward bound courses and things and bond with other bishops. But for an extra 2 points to the 4 points we got, because Jeremy knew that as well, there is a thing about casual clothing that there's, you know, it always comes around, doesn't it? They're trying to sort of trendify the church, and there's been another one of those where someone's suggesting that they shouldn't wear the frocks, not realising that most of them are in it for the frocks. You take that away from them, what have they got?
I mean, if you're going to be religious, you might as well have all the theatre and, you know, sort of mystery of religion. I don't want vicars in jeans and T-shirts and things like that. I mean, if you go to a funeral, you want somebody saying, dearly beloved, we are gathered here to mourn the passing of our dear departed brother. Do you think this surplice goes with these shoes? You don't want somebody saying, hi, everyone, my name's Bill, and I'm kind of interested in the contemporary guitar music of Brit Rock.
Get it wrong, they'd be the wrong jeans, they'd have elasticated waist.
But I like the name General Synod. I think we should get General Synod to lead the war to Iraq, and you could have this army of fantastically dull men all preaching as they move across the desert, and everybody would go, yay, General Synod, well done you, sir.
He's not a real general, though. It's like Colonel Sanders.
Is that true? OK, do not tell me Uncle Ben doesn't have nephews. I'm quite cross with you, though, Simon, because I knew the answer to that. I've got it written down just here, because I'm not going to answer the next question, which is just as well, because it's not mine.
I'll give 2 points to Linda and 1 point to Sandy, because I'm terrified she'll bite me.
In your dreams.
Those being considered for jobs as bishops in the Church of England will have to go before an interview panel for the first time in the Church's history. There are claims that candidates who fail to get appointed may suffer emotional distress, though the Synod vehemently denies any interest in bashing the bishop. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Bromley and Hayes News Shopper.
Penge needs a dynamic town centre manager that can inspire, enthuse and pick the pockets of local businesses for 3 days a week.
Thank you, Fergus Wells, for that. Linda, why are soaps bad for your health?
This is people watching soap operas on television and then going along to their doctors thinking they've got whatever illness the character in the soap opera's got.
Yep.
You know, so like there's that man in EastEnders who's had a brain tumour, so loads of people have watched that and thought, I'm watching this, I must have something wrong with my brain. I better go and have it seen to, and I don't know. And they watch Emmerdale and they go to the doctors and say, I seem to have lost the will to live. And basically, their viewing habits sort of affect their health.
If you watch Hollyoaks, you get ADD, which is acting deficit disorder.
Now, if you listen to The Archers, you get run over by a tractor.
I suppose people go in after Animal Hospital and say, I've got swine vesicular disease. I mean, is that what you're saying? Squeeze my teeth, Doctor.
A study of GPs has identified a patient syndrome known as telly-belly, which makes viewers complain about symptoms they think they share with characters in television soaps. Medical experts have warned patients that telly-belly is psychosomatic. Unless you're a 6-foot Teletubby with a 14-inch TV stuck in your abdomen anyway. Doctors claim telly-belly raises awareness of vital medical issues, such as how customers in the Queen Vic never get cirrhosis of the liver. Sandy, who hoped to get in tune with the Amazon this week?
Oh, this is a lovely story. I love the thing of there still being explorers, and there's a man called John Blashford Snell, I think it is. Known as Blashers, obviously. And Blashers was, up the Amazon.
That's slang.
I say.
I said, is that slang?
Settle.
I think it's slang for a Brazilian waxing, isn't it?
Yeah. He'd had his bikini line done, and he made the mistake of saying to the local leader of something called the Weiwei tribe, anything that I could ever do for you. And the guy said, you know, you might think we would like all sorts of things like, I don't know, walkie-talkie, radio equipment. They wanted a piano, and this was a difficulty, so they canoed up the Amazon with a grand piano, and 2 years later apparently needs tuning. There's just the one piano tuner and 29 men getting him there, and and Blashers. And the piano tuner's very worried because it's quite damp in the Amazon. He doesn't know what it'll have done to the ivories. And then they're going to send out Mrs. Mills to check.
When you think they can tune a piano in the Amazon jungle and yet people in this country are going to be going to see nativity plays in a few weeks with pianos that just sound almost... like the Second Coming.
Graham Harris is to travel 5,000 miles and hack his way through endless impenetrable jungle in order to tune a piano belonging to a 190-strong Amazonian tribe known as the Waiwai. The Waiwai still use blowpipes and dogs to catch their food. Rather like the people of Lowestoft. Alan, your last question. Who's getting their middle-of-the-road solution on the cheap?
This is not the lines in the middle of the road in Stockport.
Well, that's part of it.
Well, there are two. There was one was that the zigzags were the wrong way and zigged instead of zigzagging, which I think was in Stockport. The zigzag thing was all about how difficult it was to get it, as it were, hard to do a line in the middle of the road. Just ask Angus. And it was because you can't do the, cause you can't stand back and see this thing zigging and zagging, so they did it the wrong way. But there was another one in Wiltshire where they removed the white line from the middle of the road. Because they said it would confuse drivers and make them more cautious. It's like having, as it were, blue traffic lights, and this slows people down.
They said it would frighten people, that people slow down. If you got rid of the white lines in the middle of the road, then people slowed down so it was safer. But then that's just because people are terrified, and just, you could do that with anything. You could put up a sign saying, you are going to die! And then all just slam the brakes on.
It's a Livingston plan to open Tower Bridge during rush hour, isn't it? So this will put the roses in their cheeks.
Wiltshire County Council is removing the white lines from the middle of several roads in an attempt to improve road safety. The scheme does have its opponents. Wildlife campaigners have warned that the decision to remove the markings in the middle of the road threatens to wipe out several species of Liberal Democrats. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
This was sent to me by my friends Emma and Martin in Winchester, and it's from the Winchester and Mid-Hampshire Observer. And the editor is replying to a letter who's condemning homosexuality, saying it's wrong because the Bible says so. And the editor replies, Good point, well made, Mr. Duncan. As you say, it clearly states in Leviticus chapter 18, verse 22, that homosexuality is an abomination, which reminds me there's a couple of things I need a little guidance on. Firstly, if I wanted to sell my daughter into slavery, as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7, how much could I expect to make from such a deal? Also, my colleague Pete sometimes insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus clearly says he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself? Or is it okay to get some outside help? Lastly, does the whole city really have to be together to stone my brother John for planting different crops side by side? And when I burn my mother for wearing garments made from two different threads, do I torch her whole or just a bit?
Linda.
Well, this was sent in by Barry Davis from the Gwent Gazette. The next dance and social evening at the Orpheus Music Centre Hall will be on Saturday. Music will be provided by the Dave Charles Band. Price of tickets will be £2.50, and it includes faggots and peas for refreshments. Go along and hear their version of The Wind Beneath My Wings.
Shandy.
This is actually from this Thursday's Daily Express, and it's entitled Raider of the Lost Brain Cell. Europe's dumbest robber, who lifted up his mask to demand cash after forgetting to cut eye holes in it, has been jailed for 4 years. Masoud Dawali, 25, was filmed holding up a bank in Gießen, Germany, with a plastic knife and toy gun. He stumbled into customers and walls as he tried to find the counter. Before lifting up his mask, he was arrested a day later.
Alan.
From this week's Doncaster Evening Post, Simon. It says, while others jet off to the Seychelles or cruise the Mediterranean, Arthur Ellis and his wife Tricia make for an exclusive holiday spot as tourists, the Scaftworth Bypass. Their idyllic resort features a backcloth of rolling countryside, a view of the home of the Lord Lieutenant only partly obscured by trees, and several dry stone walls with sheep looking over them. They discovered the spot during a traffic jam en route to Cleethorpes when they pulled off the road to brew up. Since then, they have not found the need to travel further.
Let's look at the final scores. Jeremy and Linda have 16 points, but Sandy and Alan have scraped home this week's winners with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's an acknowledgement from Uckfield's Friday Ad paper.
To the person who found our father's black and white collie near Buckstead School and took him to the vets. You made an old man very happy to be reunited with his companion. Thanks also to the person who found our 94-year-old father on Saturday, who had gone searching for his dog.
Thank goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Harding, Linda Smith, Sandy Toksvig and Alan Coram. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Paul McKenzie, George Poles and Simon Littlefield. And the producer was Simon Nichols.